Hello and welcome to the Majlis Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Shavkat Mirziyoyev, the second president of the independent Uzbekistan, has just completed his sixth month in the office as the elected president of the most populated nation in Central Asia. His predecessor, Islam Karimov, was known as one of the most feared dictators of the region. Locally speaking, so far, Mirziyoyev has done little, if any, which would indicate that he would disown his former boss's legacy entirely in local affairs. But when it comes to the country's relations with the region, though, he's certainly in a different direction. As a matter of fact, he has just returned from Turkmenistan, signing a number of documents which was impossible to think during Karimov. Similarly, Uzbekistan's relations with its other Central Asian neighbors, such as Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, are also improving. On today's Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia podcast, we aim to look at the new direction of Uzbekistan's regional strategy. We will particularly discuss his point of departure, possible destination, and stops in between. To discuss all this, I have Alex Melikishvili, Senior Central Asia Analyst at the HIS Market. Alex, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you. Alisher Siddiq is joining us from Prague. He's the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbekistan service, alongside Bruce Panier, who's the editor of Kishlok OOZ, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog. Gentlemen, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Okay, with this, Bruce, let's start with you. You just gave a talk on this topic a few days ago at the George Washington University, talking only about Uzbekistan's regional policy. Can we say with certainty that this is no more Karimov's Uzbekistan?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You know, Karimov was, he got along horribly with the leaders of Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. For most of the time he was in the 25 years of independence when Karimov was in power, him and Nazarbayev were kind of in a competition for, the power state of Central Asia. And he didn't really get along with Niyazov either, although certainly Uzbek-Turkmen ties have gotten a lot better since Berdimuhamedov came in. But some of the moves that he's made early on are a great departure from what Karimov's policies would have been. And, just for instance, going to Turkmenistan, I said that Berdimuhamedov was a change for the better when he came in, at least as concerns Uzbek Turkmen relations, but it wasn't the kind of relationship where the two leaders went back and forth. Berdimuhamedov didn't show up that often in Uzbekistan, and Karimov didn't go that often to Turkmenistan. So it's kind of interesting that Mirziyoyev would decide that for his first foreign visit as the Uzbek president, he would go to Turkmenistan. I mean, it's things are much different under Mirziyoyev, regionally speaking, and I think that's a great relief to all the presidents. He's engaged with Atambayev was there at the end of December. Rahman and Berdimuhamedov were at Karimov's funeral, so Mirziyoyev met them there, and Nazarbayev stopped over the 13th of September, a little bit after Karimov's funeral. So we've had all four Central Asian leaders in Uzbekistan within a very, very short period, and that hasn't happened in a very, very long time.
Mm. Alisher, take us through some of the major shifts in the country's regional relations since Mirziyoyev was in power. As a symbolic as it might sound, as Bruce was talking about, his trip to Turkmenistan and start of the local and ministerial level dialogue with some of its neighboring countries are also some sort of a departure, I would say, from Karimov's bizarre isolationist policy. So what else has happened since he's in power in terms of his regional engagement?
He doesn't have this baggage of President Karimov being oldest in the region, being or thinking he's smartest in the region, or thinking or having some personal rows or personal, let's say, relationship with anyone. So for him, it's much easier to start everything from the clean page, as they used to say. So that's why meeting with Berdimuhamedov, they are calling themselves friends and they're very close. There is no like father and son type of relations, which Karimov always would want to have with each of these guys, with Rahman, with Berdimuhamedov, with Atambayev. He, at some point in the future, he would have his baggage, his own kind of grievances or special relationship But at this point, he doesn't have anything, and it's the whole relations are based on cold, pragmatic, economic type of exchange.
Mm. Now, in terms of like you had a Kyrgyz delegation from Osh and Jalalabad visiting Uzbekistan, and from the Uzbek side, the same visit took place to Kyrgyzstan, and then you had similar visits, exchanges of visits from Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, and you also had kind of unsuccessful attempt, or maybe it will happen, restoration of flights between Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. So what are some of the concrete steps that took place since Mirziyoyev is in power, you know, other than just talks?
You know, there are a lot of mistrust that build up over the years, you know, and these eyes should melt, and it's not happening overnight. You know, there are a lot of talks before they start doing real things, because their neighboring republics, they don't trust it very easily. They will have to meet more. They will have to eat more, this, as they say, you know, meet a lot of plov together to get along. So it's that's why at this point we know what Uzbekistan wants from Berdimuhamedov. Exactly what he wants from Turkmenistan. Everybody knows it, but nobody raising this issue because they are being very delicate and waiting for the moment when Turkmens offer that themselves. Yeah, they need cheap gas and oil, which they can use in the neighboring Bukhara refinery, the biggest, one of the biggest in Central Asia. And that would completely resolve Uzbek's problem with fuel shortages. They need it cheap, and they hope Berdimuhamedov can give it cheap. So from Tajikistan, again, very specific things they need. They need the transit through Tajikistan partially. They need the water. And they whatever they need, they kind of wrap it into friendship, all other things. And also including the airline connection, flights connection, they need to control it. They need to do it themselves and to make money from it. So it's very concrete things. And it will happen, yes, as you said. And because Tajikistan also very much dependent on Uzbeks, and they need also gas and stuff. So the region can cooperate and must cooperate. And there is a real logic behind all of these things. Uh-huh. But under Karimov, all of these things were just stuck, you know, with, uh-huh, with all the logic and economic logic you put on the table, nothing would work.
Alex, let me bring you in here. Alisher detailed some of the needs from all sides. So talking about Uzbekistan, so what does these needs explain in terms of Mirziyoyev's departure from Karimov's isolationist policy in terms of regional engagement?
I think that the most important part about his visit to Turkmenistan, which was a safe choice because Turkmenistan is officially a neutral country. I think the most important takeaway from it was what was discussed with regard to joint transportation projects, regional transportation projects. And to be honest with you, I was left with the impression that he went there to basically explain why Uzbekistan and China decided to postpone the construction of Line D of Central Asia-China gas pipeline network, which is, to be honest with you, quite a big blow to Turkmenistan, because Turkmenistan is already under an adverse impact of external factors. I'm talking about the fact that in early 2016, Russia halted gas import from Turkmenistan. Now Turkmenistan is also under the threat of international arbitration from Iran. So, you know, and then this blow came from this unexpectedly decision by Uzbekistan and China to basically halt the construction of Line D, which would have expanded gas exports from Turkmenistan to China. So, to be honest with you, I was left with the impression that that was sort of, the cornerstone of the visit. And that's my impression. But in addition to this, in contrast with his predecessor, Mirziyoyev is extremely open to Uzbekistan's more increased participation in regional transportation projects. So Berdimuhamedov, for instance, promised to Uzbek companies unfettered access to the port infrastructure that is being built as we speak. on the Caspian shore. I'm referring to the Turkmenbashi seaport, which is right now undergoing a major overhaul and supposed to be this construction project is a major infrastructure development project, is supposed to be finished by the end of this year, or so the Turkish construction company says. But you know, this is an important point of difference between Karimov and Mirziyoyev. Mirziyoyev is open to Uzbekistan's increased participation in regional transportation project. And I'd like to point out that Turkmenistan is already connected with Kazakhstan by the railway, north-south railway. So it creates opportunities for Uzbekistan to participate in that as well. There is another point that I want to mention, that just recently, I think yesterday or the day before, Tashkent hosted a very interesting meeting of a number of countries with regard to this transportation project that has been sort of stalled for a long time, which would connect Central Asia to Persian Gulf. I'm referring to a project in which you have Oman and Qatar participating as well.
For that to happen, I would say Turkmenistan needs to open up, and that's a big question that we are talking for a long, long time now. Bruce, please jump in. What do you see in terms of Mirziyoyev's priority in these engagements?
You know, Uzbekistan for years and years was always saying they had the dubious distinction of being, like, I believe, one of two double landlocked countries in the world, meaning that there was between Uzbekistan and a major body of water, a big sea like or a big ocean, there was two countries between them and any of those things. So they're about as locked, landlocked as you can get as for a country, and they need to get some cooperation going if they want to open up some trade routes, both for imports and exports. Reaching out to Turkmenistan was a good start. You know, Alex mentioned that they had the Caspian ports. That'll get them something. Hopefully they'd be able to use that to transport some of their stuff further along through the Caucasus, for instance. You know, if the North-South Railroad ever pans out, that's potentially a link to Iran and then further on to the Persian Gulf. You know, and of course you can't count out the Oman, Qatar, and I guess it's going to have to involve Iran, I imagine, at some point. But so these are all things that help stop Uzbekistan from being so isolationist, in the sense that it is geographically poorly located to be able to conduct great trade with the outside world. So it's a good start. And, you know, going to Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, although they're close right there and stuff, not such an option because the big mountains in the east, you can't really run too many transportation corridors through that. So I'm not really, I suppose, looking at it from that point of view, I'm not really surprised that his first regional visit would be to a country like Turkmenistan. And sometime later this month, he's supposed to go to Kazakhstan also, which also makes sense if you're following that philosophy that he's trying to get his country more heavily involved in global trade.
Lots of, you know, potentials, obviously. Alisher, what further steps you are expecting Mirziyoyev to take in upcoming days and months in this direction?
In the direction of regional cooperation?
Yeah.
Further steps, absolutely agree with Alex. Yes, the transportation routes will be upgraded. I'm not sure if they would be, because the transportation routes there, you know, if you play for one side, you will play against the other side. For instance, if they would create a transportation link through Kyrgyzstan, and now they're talking about it, from through Kyrgyzstan to China directly, they would leave Kazakhstan without less profits from the fees, you know, from the transit fees. Sort of, this is kind of not entirely maybe playing for everybody. So, of course, separately, we can talk about transportation. I mean, that is as much as they can cooperate with each other. You know, it's like to open borders. This is for people would be absolutely long awaited, expected thing. So the best case scenario, lifting visa regime with Tajiks, which is also kind of around in the talking about it, but not in a very serious manner. It could down the road, of course, it's expected. Also improving relations with improving border passing with Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan for people. And with Turkmenistan, it could be problematic. Again, boils down to Turkmen's own issues with this. So that's as much as I can see it at this point, you know. Then how extent they will open up for Kazakh investments, that was always a big question mark. Because under Karimov's Uzbekistan, Kazakh investments were kind of banned in a way, unofficially. Probably that will also disappear. Probably Kazakhstan will be allowed to buy something. They're now talking about investments into property in the capital, Tashkent, or in the construction business around the capital. So these type of things, but again, with Turkmenistan, as I said, they need cheap gas and oil to run their refineries. And from Tajikistan, they expect kind of a normal water flow, which has been there. So from Kyrgyzstan, it's a transit route. Again, boils down to what Alex already said. With Kyrgyzstan, they want to build a direct line, not railroad at this point, but that they want to connect Osh Andijan region with Osh and China, and from China to South Korean ports. So this is the line they're thinking about. It's out there. With Afghanistan, of course, it's another issue, which is connected to security. But again, Mirziyayev is bringing big hubs, as he put it, you know, to bring more goods so they can trade better with Afghanistan.
You know, these transportation trade very good if it happens, but there are issues between these countries, long-standing issues, things that which was the cause of the problem between these countries in many ways. Do you see a deliberate attempt on behalf of Mirziyoyev that he's trying to avoid that at this stage?
His policy toward major hydropower projects in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan is still not entirely clear, although he hasn't voiced the kind of opposition that Karimov used to voice to these projects. He hasn't totally signed off on them. I know in both Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, they've taken his relative silence on these issues as consent for them to build it, and certainly the Tajiks have moved ahead as fast as they could, seeing this as a opportunity, a slight opening of a window of opportunity there for them to build the Rogun Dam, for example. Kyrgyzstan has also mentioned the Kambarata, which was a big sticking issue with Karimov, but of course they don't have the funding to build that right at the moment. Whereas Tajikistan still needs money, some money for that, but they do have someone to build it. And if they can get loans from international organizations, they ought to have that thing up and running. But like I said, we don't really know what Mirziyoyev's policy has been. You have to kind of read between the lines on this. I mean, he sent his foreign minister, Abdulaziz Kamilov, to Tajikistan at the end of September, and he mentioned cooperation with water resources and didn't specifically oppose something like the Rogun Dam. And also in his speech to the UN just prior to his going to Tajikistan, Kamilov omitted specific mention of Rogun. But like I said, it's not like Mirziyoyev said, yes, this is a great idea and go ahead and build it. We're kind of at the level of like, you know, there's room for some discussion here without him agreeing or strongly disagreeing with such projects.
Okay. So yes, a lot seems to be taking place on the surface, but is it producing anything concrete? And more importantly, how region is reacting to today's Uzbekistan? We will continue our discussion by talking about these and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty Central Asia podcast. We are discussing Uzbekistan's new regional relations under Shavkat Mirziyayev. Joining me in the discussion are Alex Melikishvili, Senior Central Asia Analyst at the HIS Market, Alisher Siddiq, Director of Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Uzbekistan Service, Bruce Panier, Editor of Kishlok Owozi, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. So yes, a new level of regional engagement, good, but is it making any concrete difference on the ground?
Well, I think that, still too early to say whether this will produce, let's put it this way. I would describe my approach as being cautiously optimistic. You know, it was mentioned previously, something that I left out, which was the Afghanistan issue. I think Afghanistan issue kind of came to the prominence during the visit in Turkmenistan. It's not quite clear how this will be resolved, to be honest with you. So far, Ashgabat has been managing the situation at the border more or less, but it's open secret that Turkmenistan's armed forces are very weak, poorly trained, and ill-equipped. And in Central Asia, Uzbekistan has the largest and most well-equipped and best-trained armed forces. So, it will be very interesting to see as we approach spring. And as you know, spring coincides with the annual beginning of the Taliban offensive in Afghanistan. It will be very interesting to see how the situation on the border between Turkmenistan and Afghanistan plays out, and more importantly, whether we will see any indications of Uzbek military participation there, which will be a very interesting topic to watch, considering that Turkmenistan is officially a neutral country. So that's one dimension of it. The upcoming visit to Kazakhstan was mentioned, and I think that Mirziyoyev, if I'm not mistaken, sometime towards the end of this month, one item on the agenda will probably be the opening of the auto plant in Kostanay with Uzbek participation. So things are afoot. But as was mentioned by previous speakers, Uzbekistan needs to take tangible steps to improve its operating environment. One of them, which is sort of the elephant in the room, would be the harmonization of currency regimes. Because right now we have two separate currency regimes that are vastly different from each other, unofficial and official. You have a flourishing black market in currency exchange operations that benefits a great deal of people in Uzbek ruling elites. And I'm referring in particular to both law enforcement and security service. And my understanding is that Mirziyoyev's push to relax the currency controls, which would be welcomed by most of the foreign investors in Uzbekistan, this is something that is actively resisted by the sort of vested interests in the corrupt bureaucracy, state machinery. And I'm referring in particular to both security service and law enforcement. As a matter of fact, there was a Reuters report just recently in which based on two incognito diplomats in Uzbekistan, this was actually spelled out in a sense that the Uzbek security chief appears to be opposing the efforts by Mirziyoyev to essentially liberalize the currency exchange regime, which of course will also entail the depreciation of the Uzbek currency, because it has to.
Earlier, Bruce, you touched upon this, but I wanted to take Alisher's point. Looking into the region, Alisher, there are certain things which Karimov would consider red lines for Tashkent for years. Tajikistan is damned, disputed territories with Kyrgyzstan are few among many other issues. Where are those red lines falling in this opening or the regional engagement that we are talking about?
With Karimov, it was a very difficult issues because they were not discussed at all. I mean, they were just Uzbekistan would spell out its own stance on every issue, and the other party would not allow to bring, would announce its own, proclaim its own stance on the issue, and they would stand like this for ages. You know, there was no kind of tangible negotiations on these matters. With Mirziyoyev, it seems like they would talk money and profits, and they would just negotiate one by one, not at once. There are so many issues that are completely political. For security services, specifically on Reuters' report about possible tension between security and Mirziyoyev, that would be a difficult to prove. Now, the whole major talk on the ground is that Mirziyoyev is such a great person, such a great reformist, but the only person who opposes him is very bad, very old, very fat Inayatov. Yeah. So building one hero and building one enemy And basically, all of it is wishful thinking. Yeah. So we don't look at the situation like this. We don't separate them that much. We consider them as a one kind of a organ, one body of the previous regime. And the regime is still called Karimov's regime.
If I may, I would have to politely disagree because of the fact that there are specific policy implications as indicators that there is policy instability within the Uzbek government. So, for instance, if you look at the earlier announcement with regard to the introduction of the visa-free regime for a certain number of countries, I mean, there is no other interpretation that it was an embarrassment for Mirziyoyev because it was announced first and then he had to backtrack because of the fact that both law enforcement and security service basically said that they are not ready.
Alex, sorry, how do you know this?
This was actually out in the open sources that you can...
What open sources? Who said it? Like, that's the whole problem, you know, this...
I can bring a number of examples of direct indications in which there was actually formal justification that was presented by the both law enforcement and security services saying that they are not ready. But in one way or another, regardless of how you parse it, it was an embarrassment for Mirziyoyev. Because, you know, one has to ask a logical question. If you have this intention as a president of the country to scrap the visa regime for tourists in order to sort of bolster the tourism industry, then why do you backtrack? As we all know, this has been postponed by 5 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and another example. And you know when it happened, basically.
And another example that I want to bring that is a little bit more hopeful is the initiative to scrap the exit visa from Uzbekistan, which is a completely ridiculous, and only, if I'm not mistaken, North Korea and Eritrea are the other two countries that have exit visas. And there are some good news on that front because it's my understanding that a specific proposal is being prepared. It is to be unveiled sometimes in September that the exit visas will be scrapped. I mean, that will be a tangible kind of demonstration that Mirziyoyev can actually push through some of these initiatives that he has.
Yeah, I agree that it all happened, what you said. But the only thing I'm trying to get better understanding is that it's not like good Mirziyoyev wanted and bad Inayatov blocked. So we don't know that part, you know. We don't know the way it is presented. It's like we know that Mirziyoyev announced that he wants visa-free. It's not even visa-free, you know, not a real visa-free regime. And would not change anything in tourism. But the presentation is like, it's embarrassing because Inayatov did this in a certain way. Probably they are both don't want it, you know. How we don't know who is kind of proposing this to whom and who is blocking this and whether anything is blocked. So that's kind of the whole atmosphere is like good Mirziyoyev under bad Inayatov, you know. That's the thing that's very difficult to buy because in this sense, I can recall what was this first years during Karimov's time. He was the only one, and the parliament was the bad one, that would oppose him to do something. And if you remember this famous talk between President Karimov and Tahir Yuldash, he says, could you relieve me from this parliament and I will give you Islamic State? I will give you anything, you know, so I just need this bad parliament, you know, need to be kind of shut down. So it's probably the same situation here, like presenting one part as the evil and another part as a reformist. Mm. So my point is that it's not that simple as we see it. We know that Mirziyoyev is traveling all the time with Inayatov. We cannot attend those meetings. We cannot assess the level of the discontent. We cannot trust diplomats because diplomats get the information from the drivers. So that's the situation. We need to talk to direct sources. And when it comes to direct sources, at a huge, you know, lack of information.
Mm. Okay, then let me paraphrase that question a little bit differently. So there is a clear hesitation on behalf of Mirziyoyev to extend the level of engagement that he's extending to the region, to beyond the region, to international powers, to United States, to Europe. So what is stopping him from doing that? Is it his own fear, or there is a certain level of opposition to that?
The good thing about Mirziyoyev that he outsourcing a lot of things. Yeah, so not outsourcing, but delegating a lot of policies. The things that he doesn't understand, he tries not to touch at this point. So that's why issues like talking to the West is primarily under Safoyev and Komilov. And they are talking, they're negotiating. And they need money. The country needs a lot of investments. And the primary goal is now not talk about policy, but politics, but talking about economy and investments. The things that are even the West is not that much ready to talk about. Now there are our sources in EBRD claim that there is some kind of a new, let's say, hope that they can finally get back to Uzbekistan and invest in some projects. That would again require a lot of political shift from Uzbekistan. So on the other hand, there is a Russia, and again with Russia is the same talk. They need Russia as a consumer market for their cars, which Russia is no longer ready to buy. They need Russia as a consumer market for their fruits, which is, again, was difficult for a while. And Russia by itself is a suffering economic crisis. So now they're trying to diversify labor migration from Russia. So that's another issue. So for Mirziyoyev, it's a lot of talk, but talk around, not politics, but talk around economic relations, establishing joint ventures, production, manufacture, and things like this. But as Alex super correctly pointed out, that cannot happen without convertibility, without currency issues, right. You know, without resolving these currency problems at this point.
Bruce, we also have to end our discussion. But before that, what logic you see behind Mirziyoyev's hesitation to extend the engagement beyond Central Asia?
Well, I mean, I would agree to a certain extent. I mean, he's been the prime minister, so he wasn't really the one that was talking to a lot of these people. He would have met with them, but he's got a lot to think about when you're talking about dealing with Russia, the United States, China. Obviously, for a country like Uzbekistan, you got to have some fears that you're going to end up being pushed around a little bit if you get too close to them. And certainly, Uzbekistan's past has shown that its dealings with Russia have at times, and I'm talking Soviet and pre-Soviet days, Emirates and Hanates and stuff, that they ended up being taken over by Russia for unwise policies that seemed to serve some immediate purpose at the time, but long-term, of course, ended up with the regions being dominated by Russia. China is always a fear, just because it's also right next door, it's got a huge population. The good news for Mirziyoyev so far is that the Chinese policy is probably just going to stay exactly the way it is. They'll continue to invest some money. They're not going to invest more money all of a sudden and bump up the amount of cash that they're sending across or the projects that they invest in, but there'll be a steady flow. The United States, of course, is really an unknown variable at this point. I don't see a whole lot for America, and I don't imagine they will. They certainly won't spend a lot of money in Uzbekistan or Central Asia in general. That's for sure. So the things that the U.S. can provide are going to be relatively small to Uzbekistan's needs. But Russia is, Russia is, again, the big factor there. There's a lot of things Russia can do for Uzbekistan that the other countries either can't or that Uzbekistan is unwilling to let them do. And, we see this with so far, since he said, I'm throwing open the doors to foreign investment, come on in. Russia's the only one that's really shown any interest in that. But again, if he looks at what happens in Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, where Russia has just dominated the certainly political situation in those countries, I mean, they make sure that the leadership in those two countries are aware of the fact that Russia's pulling the strings. And he doesn't want to fall into that trap. There's no doubt about it. But that's, we're still trying to, as Alex said, as other people have said, too, we're only 6 months in. So it's kind of hard to figure it out. Mirziyoyev's kind of in new territory for him. He doesn't want to make the wrong move, obviously. He doesn't want to embrace somebody and have this come back and get crushed by their hug, so to speak, later on. So he's going to have to approach this a little carefully. But I have a feeling that for the most part, as far as big power politics, is going to be resolved outside by the big powers themselves. He really won't have a whole lot of say in what's going on. Security problem happens on the Afghan border. The U.S. is probably not going to give him a lot of aid, and he'll have to turn to Russia. If the economy continues to fade and really knuckles under. I mean, really hits a hard point. He'll probably end up having to turn to China and cut some kind of deal with them.
Interesting. And he's new. It's not going to change overnight. Okay, we understand that. You know, well taken point. So what is the indicator we should look for to determine whether Mirziyoyev is serious, a game changer in reshaping Uzbekistan's engagement with its region, with outside world?
If he opens up the borders more or less to trade, and by that I mean communication networks, roads, railways, things like that, which would require some easing of the customs policies along the borders, that would be a sign that we're moving in a different direction than Karimov was willing to go. I mean, internal security has always been, it's beyond a threat, it's an obsession. It has been with the Uzbek government, is they're more worried about their own people than they are about any outside threat. And if they're willing to open up a little bit, give their people inside a little bit greater freedom of motion in and out of the country, but especially outside influences coming through, you know, and like I said, it just has to be on the level of trade. You know, are you going to let the railways, are you going to open them up? We're going to go through from Russia to Tajikistan. We're going to come through from China to Turkmenistan. Are we going to let electricity go from Turkmenistan to Tajikistan through Uzbek territory? Those kind of things. Then that's a pretty good sign that he's moving in a totally different direction than Karimov.
Okay, Alisher, please.
Yeah, there is even a joke in Uzbekistan. Whenever they want to say that Mirziyoyev is going other direction, they used to joke, oh, we continue great Karimov's policy. It's becoming a joke. To continue Karimov's policy means to discontinue, actually, his policy. And the situation in Uzbekistan for ordinary people is they have a lot of hopes, you know, and in many cases, these hopes are, the expectations are so much, you know, that a tiniest move from Mirziyoyev kind of is read out as is his policy change, as it's a regime change. And the same happening in the region among regional powers, you know, whatever he does, tiny move, it's considered as a big move. The same mood is transmitting towards EBRD, some World Bank, some other international institutions. But all these not transferring to investors. So because they're looking into kind of a more tangible, concrete things they want. So I think what Alex said is very big thing. This especially currency convertibility would be very difficult and would show the very big seriousness of investment, you know, of improving the investment and opening up the country as a whole, you know, because that will be a domino effect for all other reforms in the country.
Okay, Alex, final point from you. So we are talking about what are the real indicators we should look forward to determine whether he's serious, whether his strategies are working or not working.
Well, I would just add to what was mentioned, progress in border delimitation talks with Kyrgyzstan, for instance, is an obvious area where, you know, there has been lack of progress for a long time. And, you know, that would be one specific area where if we see finally progress in terms of sides agreeing on this very complex gerrymandered landscape in the south of Kyrgyzstan, where you have ethnically based enclaves. If that is resolved in one way or another, that would be one specific indication. Scrapping of the exit visas would be another indication. And then, you know, it's my understanding that he's supposed to be visiting in April Russia. And it would be interesting to see how far Russian-Uzbek cooperation in the military and security area advances, because as we know, just recently the two sides on the level of defense ministers, they signed a bilateral agreement. So it will be interesting to see how far the two sides go. In particular, I'm referring to the fact that Uzbekistan needs to overhaul its military, and Russia will see a very lucrative opportunity in this in terms of selling weapons and equipment and military equipment to Uzbekistan.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much for your insightful comments, Alex Melikishvili, Senior Central Asia Analyst at HIS Market. Also, big thanks goes to Alisher Siddiq, Director of Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Uzbekistan Service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Kishlok Ovozi, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That's it from me, Mohamed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.